If you kind of like fitness, then you'll definitely love this podcast. You are listening to the Fit-ish Podcast, where you'll hear a lot about fitness and a lot about other-ish.
Hello and welcome back to the Fit-ish Podcast. This is your host, V. Alan Yee, alongside ASAP Monty, aka Monica Blanco, aka $APMONNY. On today's episode, we are going over 10 common fitness myths, but we're not just here to completely debunk them. We want to go over why they might be truthful or where they came from, what truth led them to this myth. Because behind every myth is a tinge of truth. And we just want to get down to see and figure out where that truth lies and figure out how that truth became a myth over time. And so we will go over 10 common fitness myths, starting with eating carbs at night. Does eating carbs at night make you fat? Can you eat whatever you want if you exercise? Women needing different weights. And finishing somewhere at the bottom, talking about how cardio is the best tool for fat loss. And in between, we talk about how you should not stretch before lifting or how you actually should stretch before lifting, how fasted cardio does not burn more calories, why eggs are not bad for your cholesterol, what toning your muscles actually means, why you don't need protein 30 minutes after a workout, and the myth of rep ranges. Which rep range is the best? Is it 3 to 5? Is it 8 to 12? Is it more than 15 reps? We go through all of those different myths, break them down, try to figure out where the truth lies and what you can actually do to implement into your daily life and into your workout schedule and what's going to benefit you the most. If any of that sounds interesting at all to you, please stick around and listen to the rest of this podcast. We will also hopefully have timestamps if you only want to listen to a part of the podcast for a specific part of that myth that we go over. So buckle up, enjoy the ride. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, blast off. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning, Alan.
Did you just forget my name?
No, it's evening where I am.
No, it's... Oh, really? It's only 5 o'clock there.
Isn't that technically evening? When does evening start?
When the sun goes down.
Whatever. Good morning.
It's actually afternoon over here too, so I don't know. I just say good morning because it's the best.
Anyway, how have you been?
Good. Why are you wearing sunglasses indoors?
I think it just makes me feel my best, and we like to do what makes us feel our best here.
That's good. We love that.
How was your trip to New York?
It was good. I love New York.
Are you excited to move?
I am excited to move.
Next month? Hopefully end soon. Of the month?
Maybe, yeah, end of the month.
All right.
All righty then. What is your favorite fitness myth, if you had to pick just one?
My favorite myth? There's so many.
Maybe you should choose this first one that's on our list here.
Okay, you're right. Okay, eating carbs at night makes you fat.
Oh, that is such a great fitness myth. Why do you like that one the best? And what's wrong with it?
I guess I never really chose it to be my favorite myth.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think there's just so much demonizing of carbs per usual. But I don't. What did you ask me?
Oh, I just asked what your favorite myth was and why.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just following the copy here. So Eating carbs at night makes you fat. Why is that a myth?
Well, there's no like set process in your body that automatically turns carbs into fat at night. But that's a great one. So we're going to go over 10 common fitness myths today. And so let's start with this one. Eating carbs at night makes you fat. So you probably hear that a lot from people and they tell you don't eat carbs at night. It will make you fat, with the assumption that your cells will automatically store all the carbs and glycogen as fat. But we know that that doesn't happen.
Why specifically at night? Like eating carbs in the morning, will that make me fat?
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why it's at night, but here is part of the truth where that statement might come from. And it's it's because you make bad decisions at night. So while eating carbs themselves won't make you fat, you can eat them in the morning, in the middle of the day, or at night. The main thing that will cause weight or fat gain is if you're in a surplus of calories.
Correct.
And you're more likely to get into a surplus at night because you're making bad or poor food decisions, and it's a lot harder to moderate your food.
What are the types of foods that people typically crave at night?
Oh, well, it's apples, bananas, blueberries, celery sticks, carrots, all the great foods that everyone craves, right? No, obviously, people like you and I, I crave like sweets, like chocolates, I don't know, pizza, ice cream, very savory foods like that. Like, how often do you go out and maybe ask your friends like, yo, you want to get some ice cream later tonight? You never go out and say, yo, you want to go out and get some carrot sticks tonight? No, obviously there's a reason why you're aiming and choosing those foods, whether it be like from a social aspect or just a decision-making aspect. And then because of that, you're also unable to moderate as well. I don't know who goes out and, you know, just gets one scoop of ice cream, not one, like less than one scoop, like a sample size scoop. How often do you just go out and get sample size scoops of ice cream? No, you usually want to indulge a little bit. You've had a long day. You want to, you know, treat yourself. And that's why you're getting maybe 2 to 3 scoops of ice cream.
Mm-hmm. And then it's like that. I mean, there's a psychology behind it too, where it's like, oh, you make one bad decision. Well, I already messed it up, so I might as well keep eating.
Yeah. And I think that's where people run into trouble. So the myth is eating carbs at night makes you fat. That is still a myth. Just solely eating carbs at night will not make you fat. If you're in a surplus, that will make you fat. And the reason why we're bringing this up is because you're probably making poor decisions at night, especially on a weekend night. You're probably making poor decisions. So it's just good to get back on track and realize that the carbs themselves aren't making you fat. It's the fact that you're overindulging and getting into a surplus that's making you fat.
Precisely. And that,
I think we covered that pretty well.
Yeah, I was going to say that leads in perfectly to our next fitness myth. Mm-hmm. You can eat whatever you want if you exercise.
You can eat whatever you want if you exercise. So a lot of people ask me, what do I eat? And I literally tell them like, whatever I want right now. But here's the difference between the truth where the myth comes from. And it is that I'm at a point where I am consciously choosing foods that will benefit me, whether it's for lifting or just living a daily life. So I feel like when people start exercising, especially like young teenage boys, they think that they can eat literally whatever they want and exercise it off, which you will come to a point where, I don't know, maybe you're starting a desk job after graduating, that will no longer be the truth. So you can't always just eat whatever you want if you exercise. And I think most people who start exercising, they might not see it immediately, but after a certain point, they'll start to make better decisions about their food subconsciously, just knowing that they have to exercise the next day or that they already had a good exercise today. It's kind of the opposite point of where if someone fucks up on their diet, that they just let it all go to waste. They're like, oh, I messed up. I'm just going to eat whatever I want. I think to the same degree, but the opposite effect is that people, especially if they exercise early in the morning, they're like, oh, I exercised in the morning. I just want to feel good throughout the day. So the food choices that they make are going to be a lot better than if they hadn't exercised. And so I think that's where the myth comes from, but a little bit of truth behind the myth is that if you do exercise, you might start to eat whatever you want, but you're making much better decisions about the food you're intaking.
Yeah, I think we could also talk about how, I mean, exercise itself is only, what is the percentage? Like 20%, like movement?
Oh, right. In terms of like BMR and TDE. Yeah.
Right.
It's like 15 to 20 to 25% of your total daily energy expenditure, TDEE.
Yeah, sure.
Wait, what was the point of bringing that up?
I forgot.
Okay, good point. Anyways, what is another common fitness myth that we're going to break down?
Women need different exercises than men.
Right. And specifically, the idea that women need high rep and low weight. So this is a myth. We're just going to come out and say that this is false. Women don't need different exercises than men. But I think the truth behind this is that women and men tend to gravitate towards different exercises.
Mm-hmm. Like women can respond differently to different training modalities. I know, right. I love doing high rep types of resistance training exercises. I don't love lifting heavy all the time or like doing explosive types of movement. I think it's the mm-hmm. same thing too with like athletes.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to gravitate towards, you know,
one thing over the other. Yeah. So while women don't necessarily need different exercises than men, I think it's very much an individual basis type of thing where just kind of you fall into the exercises that you enjoy doing more than the others. And we do know, yeah, that women tend to respond better to the more endurance-based exercises. So the high rep, low weight exercises going into the 25-30 rep range, whereas men just don't really respond to it as well in the studies that some people have provided, like Dr. Schoenfeld, Dr. Aragon. So, yeah, if you're a woman listening, you don't need different exercises, but you probably gravitate more towards the lower body exercises rather than trying to do arms. But that doesn't mean that you can't do upper body exercises, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you still do upper body exercise.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And you'll probably get more benefit by going into a full body routine or making sure you're hitting upper and lower rather than just focusing on your lower body.
Correct.
Yeah.
I wanted to say like, something else about this, but
if you think of it, let me know. Just kind of like the guys who only hit upper body is that you'll develop chicken legs, and two, you don't want that imbalance. But also, for the guys who only want to be hitting upper body, like chest, shoulders, and arms, you should get into squats because squats release the most amount of testosterone.
Oh, fun fact.
And so that can actually help increase your upper body muscle growth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Wow, we just did the 180 right there. But yeah, the myth was women need different exercises than men. That is not true. But women might tend to toward other exercises that are not used by men as much. Maybe glutes, lower body exercises.
Yep. I'm going to just pass on whatever I wanted to say earlier. So let's move on to the next one. You should not stretch before lifting.
You should not stretch before lifting. So we hear this so much on social media, and for some reason, people are shoving it down our throats right now that you shouldn't do any sort of like static stretching before lifting. I think the emphasis should be on the static stretching.
Yep.
And then they'll give the reason that it lowers your performance. So what I'm going to say is going to be contrary to this, is that unless you're a high performance athlete needing to be at 90% of your maximal intensity, I'm going to say if stretching makes you feel good and makes you want to work out, then you should stretch. You should stretch before lifting. Because yeah. You've probably been sitting all day, you've been stagnant. If getting a little stretch in just 5 to 10 minutes before your workout makes you feel better, I'm perfectly fine with you doing that. Especially if you're someone who's not working with super heavy weight. If you're just working with low weight, high reps, and you don't really care about how much weight you're lifting, you just want to get in the gym and get a lift in, and you're not worried about being the strongest person in the gym, then I see no problem with stretching before lifting. Don't let people scare you into thinking that you should never stretch before lifting, because if that's what you want to do and that gets you into the gym, there's literally no problem with it.
Yeah, I agree. I also think with some like certifications, I know we're taught to do, you know, a specific sequence of stretching to address imbalances or, you know, whatever. But like you said, if you feel like it just makes you feel better overall, I mean, it can have a psychological benefit to it too. It's same with foam rolling. Like we don't really know exactly how it might benefit your performance, but you know, if it's part of your routine, makes you feel better, you feel like you can do your workout your best, then I think it's fine. Like it doesn't need to be demonized like it is right now on social media.
Yeah. Again, if you're a high performance athlete, D1 athlete, professional athlete, well, you're probably not listening to this anyways, but if you think you are,
we don't know.
Then you probably don't want to be stretching before lifting. And I think the idea goes back to the sliding filament theory, talking about like sarcomeres and how your actin and
myosin.
Yeah, there we go. Actin, myosin. How those two things. Wait, is it myosin?
I don't know.
I know actin's one of them. I need to brush up on it.
Actin.
What does actin bind to?
Oh, man, that's annoying.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. My anatomy is failing me right now. But sliding filament theory, basically the idea behind not stretching before your maximal lifts is that you're unable to get as much force generation and as much power if your sarcomeres aren't as in a contracted state. So when you're stretching, you're literally uncontracting your muscles, right? You're lengthening your muscles, eccentrically contracting, where that's going to damage how much you can concentrically contract.
Are you ready?
Force production.
I looked it up.
Oh, you looked it up? Oh, cool. Uh-huh. What is actin binds to?
According to the sliding filament theory, the myosin, thick filaments of muscle fibers slide past the actin, thin filaments during muscle contraction.
Cool. So it is actin and myosin. We got it. What wraps around the myosin? Doesn't it? There's something blocking it before, and then once like calcium binds, it releases the head or whatever's wrapped around.
Didn't get that
There's
far.
A third part. Anyways, beyond the scope of this podcast. But yeah, that's the sliding filament theory. The more stretched out you are, the less contractile production you can have. And that's the whole idea behind not stretching before lifting. But if stretching makes you feel better, I don't know. It's kind of paradoxical, contradictory. But you're probably not working to 90% of your max, so it doesn't really matter.
Just do your thing, basically, is what we're trying to say.
If it makes you feel good, then do it. I see no problem.
All right, let's move on. Fasted cardio burns more calories.
Fasted cardio burns more calories. And we have a little article to read over here. What's the article over here? The title of it is Body Composition Changes Associated with Fasted versus Non-Fasted Aerobic Exercise. This was published in the Journal of the International Society of Sports Nutrition. The first and second authors are Dr. Schoenfeld and Alan Aragon, two big names in the fitness space. And do you have the abstract up, or can you summarize the paper real quick? Are you able to?
No, I don't have it up.
That's okay. Basically, I'll summarize it here. Basically, there was no difference between the fasted and non-fasted groups in terms of body composition. So they kept everything the same. They kept diet the same, the calorie deficit the same. And they were measuring body composition changes, such as fat changes and I think muscular changes by measuring like around the thighs and around the arms. They saw no difference in the fasted versus non-fasted groups. So people will probably tell you that fasted cardio burns more calories. It really doesn't. But what is a benefit of doing fasted cardio? Well, let's think about it. You're waking up in the morning and the first thing you're doing is movement. You probably haven't had any food, hadn't had any coffee. You're just waking up, going to the gym, and that's great. You've won the day already. And then let's think of all the good downstream effects, like we talked about with the other myths. What are downstream effects of just waking up and doing cardio in the morning? What do you think? How do you think your day is going to go the rest of the day?
You're probably going to be in a way better mood. You're going to make a lot better decisions throughout the day.
Yeah. You won the day. I think there are benefits of fasted cardio in terms of
energy,
brain performance. Yeah, energy. You get more brain-derived neurotropic factors. I think that is a benefit of fasted cardio. So the benefits of fasted cardio aren't necessarily in the calories you burn, but it's everything downstream.
Yep.
You get more mental clarity. You'll probably make better decisions later throughout the day. If you see pizzas and cupcakes versus, I don't know, something that is better for your body. Not saying that I would never not choose pizza and cupcakes, but there are some days where if I get a good workout in, the pizza just isn't as appealing to me.
Totally.
Anymore,
I feel right? that.
I'm not trying to demonize pizza here on this episode
of
today, but
not.
There are just some days where it's not appealing anymore, right?
Yeah. I'm sure you felt that. Again, very individual to you. I also wanted to share a plug for Dr. Andrew Huberman, because he shares a lot of like science-based tools. He talks a lot about fasted cardio, more on the neuroscience side of things. So that's another resource that we can share.
Wait, what did you say?
He said pretty much a similar thing to what you just said about something
mental
with
clarity,
yep.
BDNF. Yeah, we love BDNF, not BDSM, BDNF.
Oh, yeah. I won't say anything about that. Anyways,
I think we finished that myth off, right?
Yep.
So let's just recap that one.
Just personal preference.
Personal preference. Fasted cardio does not burn more calories, but it probably sets you up much better for the day. But if you can't do your cardio fasted, it's okay. Doing it non-fasted, probably get the same body composition.
Can I also
changes.
Just say that I actually have been changing up my morning routine.
Wow.
I have been waking up, and the first thing I do is put on workout clothes, and I just go outside and I go on a walk, and it's not even 10, 20 sometimes minutes.
Yeah.
Delaying my caffeine intake.
There we go. That's good.
And you know, it's been pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah. You do want to delay your caffeine intake, because right when you wake up, that's when your cortisol has peaked, right?
Mm-hmm.
That moment you wake up, cortisol has peaked, which is catabolic.
Yep.
So it eats at your muscles. So actually one of the first things you want to do is try to decrease your cortisol, because you want to preserve as much muscle as possible. No matter who you are, whether you're a bodybuilder or a regular person, you want to preserve your muscle because it's such a good organ to have for longevity. So many benefits, protective benefits. So one way to decrease your cortisol is, like Monica said, light, active movement.
Mm-hmm. That can
first,
be yoga.
Before your caffeine. Yeah.
Yep,
could be stretching, anything. Yeah, there you go. And also get water before your caffeine. It just, delaying that caffeine is really good. And bringing that cortisol down is another good way before you get that caffeine. Because caffeine is just going to increase your cortisol back up.
Yeah, I guess also that's why a lot of people meditate in the morning.
Yeah.
It kind of all makes sense now.
All makes sense. There's always some truth behind it.
Yep. Number six.
Sixth fitness myth on our list.
Eggs are bad for your cholesterol.
Oh my gosh. So I get this DM so much because I love eggs.
I love eggs.
But even more so, I love ketchup and eggs. But
I love ketchup and eggs. Wait,
it's so good, right?
Just tell me how you like your eggs prepared.
Scrambled?
Yeah. I mean, I don't discriminate.
So. There are many ways. There are like 40 different ways. There's scrambled, sunny side up, fried.
Over easy?
Over easy.
Do those count? Yeah, okay.
Hard boiled.
Poached.
Benedict. Yeah. And then the other variations are like variations of what we just described. But there's like 40 different ways.
Okay.
The other 30 aren't as like cool. They're like just a variation. But people are always asking, they're like, wow, that's so many eggs. Like I usually eat 5 to 6 eggs. And they're like, that's so many eggs. Isn't that bad for your cholesterol?
Where did that come from?
And that came from the 70s and 80s, where they said like eating fat is bad.
Mm.
Right.
Love there was that one.
I think, was it the 70s? Yeah, 70s and 80s. Fat was bad for you. That's where they made margarine. Margarine is fake butter, which is just trans fats and hydrogenated oils. We now know, I don't think anyone eats margarine anymore. Margarine is literally fake butter, and it's so bad for you.
I can't believe it's not butter.
That's all. I think that was also margarine, but that's also, no one eats that anymore. Like, everyone knows that regular butter is better for you than fake butter.
It ain't butter. It's butter flavor.
Yeah, that's so okay. So it came from the 70s where the FDA was trying to demonize fats, and that's where they pushed carbs a lot more. That's where you get the rise of like huge cereal brands and all that stuff. And they said that fat makes you fat. So there was also this push saying that eggs have cholesterol and therefore will affect your cholesterol. Right.
So I guess the transitive property of equality.
Right. Yeah. I guess it makes sense in the transitive sense. Like, eggs have cholesterol, and we know that cholesterol is linked to heart disease. Therefore, eggs lead to heart disease, right? Eggs have cholesterol. Cholesterol leads to heart disease. Therefore, eggs are bad for you.
All right.
But what they did not mention is that, one, there are different forms of cholesterol, right? There's you have HDL, high density lipoproteins, and LDL, low density lipoproteins. So two forms of cholesterol. One is good cholesterol, which is HDL. HDL, the mechanism of HDL is to take LDL and transport it away from wherever it forms. LDL cholesterol, low density lipoprotein, are bad, and they aggregate and they form plaques. They form plaques in your arteries, which causes poor blood flow, high blood pressure. And when these plaques break away by themselves, like when they form so much, they can either create a stoppage, which leads to ischemia, which is basically like heart failure, stroke, things like that. Or they can get knocked off by something else in your blood, and these plaques will form somewhere else, again, causing stroke or heart failure, heart attack, things like that. So two forms of cholesterol to begin with, right? Next thing I need to say is that dietary cholesterol has a very small effect. I believe statistically almost insignificant and negligible on blood cholesterol. So dietary cholesterol has a negligible effect on blood cholesterol, right? So there's no transitive property of eating cholesterol that affects your cholesterol in your blood when they're looking between the two. The thing you need to worry about for your cholesterol, your bad cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, is trans fats. So if you're looking at foods, seeing what foods are affecting you or what fats are affecting you, you want to look at the trans fats especially. I think saturated fats as well, but definitely the trans fats. You'll see those in like icings. Almost any processed food will have trans fat, like cupcakes, things like that. Things that have had to be manufactured. Trans fats is talking about like the bonds in the fats. Yeah, again, beyond the scope of this podcast. But basically, eggs are not bad for your cholesterol. Eggs are actually beneficial to your cholesterol because they'll help improve your HDL levels. Trans fats are worse for your cholesterol, if anything. If you were gonna lower, but also talk to your doctor. Neither of us are doctors. This is just information that we're passing on. This is not medical advice. Trans fats. Eggs are perfectly fine. Also, cholesterol is the precursor to your steroid hormones. So testosterone and estradiol. Yes, estradiol. I think, because estradiol turns into estrogen. Same with testosterone, can aromatize into estrogen. So cholesterol, if you're trying to increase your testosterone, you need more eggs. You need more cholesterol. Good cholesterol. HDL, not LDL. We don't
lose.
No L's, okay? Hopefully I'm right. Please, if I'm wrong, please just DM us.
You know, I hope you are right too.
I brushed up last night though, to make sure.
Look at you just preparing for this podcast.
I'm telling you, I put the team on my back.
You do. Does it hurt?
It actually right now it does because I tried to do, I did some power cleans and I just think my form was off. I pulled too fast. Oh, I didn't warm up properly. Let me pull up this link. What did you just send me?
I just sent you a little fun fact from
Alan Aragon. Let's go. Okay. Yeah. Look at this. So this is a tweet from Alan Aragon talking about, well, the tweet is about a research study. And here's what he said. He said, so here's another feather in the cap for egg consumption, which is a positive connotation, which my vegan friends despise passionately. Always a pleasure to see research supporting my personal food preferences. Haha, bonus, eggs are apparently a superfood if you're Asian. And here's the study conclusion from the BMJ. Is that British Medical Journal?
Let's Something. Find out.
What does BMJ stand for? Drum roll.
Where does it
BMJ,
say?
BMJ, 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 not TMJ. TMJ is your temporomandibular joint. Everyone has TMJ. Not everyone has TMJ syndrome, which
I believe
is the
lockjaw. You know what? Go ahead and read the conclusion.
Okay. Well, while Monica figures out what BMJ stands for, basically the conclusion here about eggs is here. Results from three cohorts and from the updated meta-analysis show that moderate egg consumption, up to one egg per day, is not associated with cardiovascular disease risk overall. And here's the highlighted portion. And is associated with potentially lower cardiovascular disease risk in Asian populations. So again, they're talking about one egg a day. I eat basically six eggs a day. So, but they are saying that one egg a day actually has positive benefits and not the negative benefits that people thought because they thought cholesterol is all bad. And what does BMJ stand for, Monica?
Brought to you by the British Medical Journal.
I got it right again. Again, my back hurts so much carrying this team. I'm kidding. Monica does a lot too.
Yeah. All right. Next myth here. Number seven, toning. Toning your muscles.
What does that mean, Monica?
What does that mean? What do you mean? What does it mean? To me, it just...
What's toning your muscles?
Well, when I think of that, I just think of building muscle and losing body fat.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Backtrack. You have a client.
Yes.
I'm your client.
Okay.
I want to tone my muscles.
All right. That's great. Let's do it. Okay, are you going to pay me?
Yes. What exercises are you going to give me? I want to tone only. I don't want to get bulky. I want to be lean and toned. I don't want huge muscles like Arnold Schwarzenegger. What are you going to do for me?
We're just going to set you up with a strength training program.
Oh, no. You said strength. I said I want to tone.
But toning is just another way to say... building muscle and losing body fat.
No, I don't want to build muscle. I just want to tone.
I can't do this with you right now.
So, but do you see? So, if you guys just heard that, see how much of a difference there might be between tone versus strengthening and building muscle. So, here the myth is that you can't just tone your muscles. Like, toning, the word itself is not a great word, but here is a perfect example of when you'd want to use it. So coming back to the client, just be like, okay, we're going to tone your muscles because some people just want to hear you use that word. Toning is all about the psychology behind the word and behavior. If someone is so adamantly against building strength, building muscle, then just tell them, okay, we'll tone. Like sometimes it's better to just give in to what they want and lean into that and tell them that it's going to be toning and still give them, you know, a strength phase, a hypertrophy phase, and be like, oh no, like, don't worry about it. It's all toning. And they're like, okay, yeah, like, I love it. Like, I'm seeing the results. So sometimes it's better to not argue with someone and just, you know,
let them have
lean
it.
Lean into it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, also everybody's perception of bulk, like you could look at me and think that
it's word choice.
Oh my God, she's bulky.
Yeah. Well, what's non-bulky then?
Right. And what's strong and lean? Yeah. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So we just wanted to say that toning your muscles is a myth because any muscle that can have a contraction has muscle tone by like the scientific definition. But we also want to address that sometimes word choice helps the psychology of working out. If you want to name a workout a toning workout, because you know the people who you are presenting it to are more likely to do that workout or that program, then by all means, I think it's fine. The only, yeah, I guess the issue with it is like providing a shit program and saying it's a toning program where there's no weights involved, no real like strength adaptation phase involved. And it's just like moving your arms in circles for 30 days and saying it's toning. Like that's shitty. That's shitty on you as a person, I feel like.
It is. I feel like it's the same with shredded.
That's a scam.
Like get shredded.
Get shredded. V shreds.
Yeah. All right. Number 8. You need protein 30 minutes post-workout.
You know who? Do you know why this is such a prevalent thing now?
Now? I thought it...
Or, well, I mean, do you know why still? This is such a prevalent thing still? Yeah.
I guess I don't know why.
Well, it's because of like the protein industry, like the protein companies. Like any company that has like a protein powder, what do they want you to do? They want you to buy protein powder. How will they get you to buy more protein powder?
Making it urgent. Yeah.
By ritualizing it, making you think that you need it 30 minutes after a workout. If you're taking it 30 minutes after a workout every day and consistent, then you're buying more tubs of their protein. Or if you're at the store, you're buying a pre-made shake, right? You're like, oh, I don't have time to make one. I'm just going to buy the shake, which is, you know, priced up 5 to 10 times more than like what a tub per serving is going to be. Because like a tub, if you get 30 servings, that's, and it's $30, that's $1 per scoop. If you buy a protein shake at the gym after your workout, that's $5. That's already 5 times the price.
You know, I really like the protein. Speaking of protein, the one on your Amazon page. I think people can get that if they go to the link in your bio, right?
Yeah, I have an Amazon shop. I have some protein recommendations. And we're not completely shitting on protein powders. There are benefits, but we're just telling you that you don't need protein 30 minutes after a workout. There is no anabolic window. Well, hold on. There is an anabolic window, but it's not as short as you think.
Yeah. I was also going to say there are still some bros or people that still, you know, believe this myth. Mm-hmm. And I think but some people that maybe just don't know any better, they buy into them attributing their results to taking in that protein. Maybe they're just very regimented with it, but it's not because they consume it right after their workout. It's probably because their programming is freaking amazing.
Right. And that I mean, like you said, they regimented it. They take it consistently. If it helps you, that's fine. We just want you to know that it's not going to be the end of the world if you don't or are unable to get protein in 30 minutes after workout.
Yeah,
you can even get it up to.
Yeah, it's not the end all be all, or like not the reason that you're not going to see results.
I would say the only time you need it 30 minutes after a workout is if you are going to have another workout that day and you do need to replenish your protein and glycogen stores. I think it would be more important to get carbohydrates right after a workout if you're going to have another workout. But you can delay that protein intake up to about 4 hours and still get the muscle protein synthesis benefits that researchers see from the protein intake after a workout. And even for some people who have maybe gastrointestinal issues, I know that there was a study about the gut lining is a little bit more expanded. So like in people with like leaky gut syndrome, their intestinal walls, gut lining walls are a little bit more expanded. Like the tight junctions create little gaps. And so it's actually not good for you to be eating right after a workout. You want those gaps to close up again before ingesting anything, especially if you have any sort of gastrointestinal issues. So if you feel like you eat right after workout and you feel like super bloated right after eating, or you feel any gastrointestinal distress after eating, maybe try just delaying it for a little bit, maybe an hour, 2 hours, up to that 4 hour mark, and then eating after your workout, after that delayed period.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know for me personally, I just don't enjoy eating right after a workout. Might be because I've been on a really bad caffeine kick and I've been having a lot of caffeine. So I don't feel like hungry after a workout. Could also be stress. Maybe I'm stressed after a workout and I just don't feel hungry. I don't know.
Interesting.
I usually don't eat right after a workout. If I do, I kind of have to force myself to eat, but that's if I have like a long day and need to eat then and there and won't be able to later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I want to pay attention to how I feel post-workout because I don't really pay attention to that.
Yeah, you should.
All right. Number nine. Are we ready?
Almost done here. Number nine.
Rep ranges. What rep range builds the most muscle? There's no way.
Well, of course, bro. It's the 8 to 12 rep range.
I thought it was 3 to 5.
Oh, no. I think you're thinking of 12 to 15.
Oh, okay. You might be right. You might be right.
Psych! See how confusing that is? So everyone has a different rep range saying that this rep range will build the most amount of muscle. The thing you need to realize is that everything works, but nothing works forever. Mm. I'll say it again. Everything works, but nothing works forever. If 8 to 12 rep range was the most optimal for building muscle, just period, absolute statement, then why did Arnold Schwarzenegger ever get into some powerlifting even though he was in his bodybuilding competition days? Why would he ever do three reps of heavy deadlifts when his goal is to maximize his muscle building? Why wouldn't he just do 8 to 12 reps for the entirety of his, 20 to 30 year career in bodybuilding? Shouldn't it just work forever? No, nothing works forever.
Unfortunately. But
I think people get caught up where they think about muscle confusion and they think every workout should be different. So maybe one workout, 3 reps, then the next one, they're going 15, then they're going back down to 12.
Yeah, they're not consistent enough with one
training method. You got to find the medium there. So it's like if you want to do 8 to 12 reps, you're working that for 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, very minimum 4 weeks, very maximum 8 weeks. Once you start to hit that plateau, or if you're really good right before the plateau starts in terms of like your muscle building or your strength building, you're already switching over to a new program, maybe going down to working on sets of 3 reps. And when we're talking about the rep range, I usually don't think of like the whole workout being like everything is just 3 reps. I'm thinking about the main prime movers, the bulk of the meat of it. So like for your big 4, big 5 lifts, like bench press, deadlift, squat, overhead press, and row, you're moving those between like the 3 reps to the 8 reps, to the 12 reps, to the 15 reps. But for accessory work, things like pull-ups, you can always be doing as many reps in whatever range you enjoy, or lunges or Bulgarian split squats. I think it would be dumb to do Bulgarian split squats for reps of 3, like just straight up. Just the fact of getting into that position and getting the weights ready, like, and you're doing 3 reps, like,
that sounds terrible.
It sounds awful. Yeah. So things like that, you can always be doing like 8 to 12 reps, and I think you'll still find good benefits from it.
Perfect.
I hope that helps. And I think we've reached the last one here. We made this podcast in under an hour, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Before we hit our very last question here, make sure to share this podcast with a friend who might need it. Make sure to follow us if you're listening on Spotify. Maybe download the episode. I don't know if that's helpful or not. We still have to learn this whole podcasting thing out. Share it on your story. Just help get the word out there so that more people find our podcast. And hopefully we can keep providing great educational and entertaining information for you all. So let's go to number 10.
Let's go. Cardio is the best tool for fat loss.
So again, this is our 10th myth. We've even debunked this myth either on this podcast in episode 1 or on our pages. I'm going to tell you that cardio is not the best tool in terms of efficiency for fat loss. I'm going to tell you that building muscle is the best tool for fat loss. But we are playing devil's advocate on all of these myths, trying to figure out the truth behind them. And so, when would cardio be the best tool for fat loss? Well, it's for walking. Walking is literally cardio, and it's the most underutilized tool for fat loss. Everyone thinks that when people say you need to do cardio for fat loss, they automatically think to running.
Yep.
Why is that? Well, I mean, running is a great thing, but not a lot of people know how to run properly. I think the average percentage of runners who get hurt is a lot higher than like any sort of the weightlifting sports, even like Olympic lifting.
Really?
People sprain their ankles, like minor injuries, sprain their ankles, hurt their toe, things like that. People don't know how to run properly, nor do they have like the mechanics to run properly.
But walking, anyone
can walk. And so I think the tinge of truth that comes with cardio is the best tool for fat loss is if you're talking about walking. Monica, how many steps does the average American person get every day?
According to Mayo Clinic, the average American walks 3,000 to 4,000 steps a day. So we can think about maybe 1.5 to 2 miles. Unless you got little legs like me.
Yeah, you can get more steps faster, I feel like. Okay, but what is your monthly average steps for the month of July so far?
I have no idea.
Do you know how to look it up?
Do I look on Apple?
Yeah, health. So you'll health. Yeah, it's just health.
Health. Okay, what's yours? Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get everyone on there. So if you have an iPhone, go ahead and search for the health app, click it open, and you'll click on show all health data, and you're going to click on steps. I want you to click at the very top. You have day, week, month, and year. Go ahead, click on month. I want you to look at your average monthly steps for whenever you're listening to this. Right now, we're in July. Today is July 21st. My monthly average for steps is 6,748.
Mine is 5,403.
How much do you want to guarantee that 90% of people listening don't get more than 10,000 steps?
I would not want to bet against that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. DM us if you do get over 10,000 steps.
Send a screenshot.
Send a screenshot because most people just aren't getting 10,000 steps. I mean, as simple as that. And so just going from 2,000 to 3,000 or 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 to 10,000, any of those numbers up to 10,000, you're going to see like these amazing benefits. You're expending energy just through walking. And I understand people don't have a lot of time and they can't spend 2 hours of their day getting up to 10,000 steps. One, I'm just going to tell you, it doesn't take 2 hours to get 10,000 steps. Number two, Monica is going to tell you easy ways to get steps in without having to just dedicate a time for it like you do for working out.
Yeah, and Monica, we could do,
can go back and forth here.
Stacking, yeah. After every meal.
After every meal. That's mine that I always say. After every meal, 10-minute walk. What happens? You get digestion. And if you go at a brisk enough pace, you get an increase in mTOR. mTOR is something of rapamycin, something. mTOR, increasing mTOR helps build muscle. So basically walking right after a meal, quick 10-minute brisk pace, you get your steps in, you help build muscle. Let's see, another one. If you're in an urban sprawl and you're going to go grocery shop, just parking a little bit further away, not parking right in front of the entrance. You can go a little bit further, get an extra 500 steps into the grocery store, and that'd be great. grocery shopping twice a week. I had a client who went grocery shopping and he got like 4,000 steps just from grocery shopping, just from like walking through the aisles. Yeah, you get a lot of steps. People don't realize it. So maybe instead of doing one big haul every week, go twice a week, spend a little less time. Maybe instead of one 90-minute session of grocery shopping, two 45-minute sessions. And also, if you get a lot of fruits and veggies, those spoil quickly. So I always throw out a lot of fruits and I need to not do that anymore. So I'm going to go a little more frequently. That way I don't throw it out as much.
Yeah. Especially if you're sitting at a desk all day too, it's important to take frequent breaks. And even if it's literally a walk around the block.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to be all or nothing about it. Just.
I've literally woken up and started working on my computer. And by like 3 PM, I've only had like hundreds of steps, like 200 steps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from like going to the bathroom and then getting food, washing my hands, coming back. Think about that. Being up for 6 hours and only having 200 steps. That's like what people are doing on a day-to-day basis now. And that's why we say that like walking is the most underutilized tool, but it's literally the best tool. And it is a form of cardio. And that form of cardio could be really helpful for fat loss if that's where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And I know not everybody can actually walk, but even if you are getting outside, moving around, however
getting
you
some
can.
Vitamin D.
Yep. Everyone, I think it's always a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I also like to sometimes just put my phone like super far away when I'm working.
Right.
Any reason for you to just get up?
Oh, I thought you were saying as in like you don't track your steps because you don't have your phone. Because I know some people who like they get tons of steps, but they just don't like having their phone on them constantly. But I think it would be a cool thing to see like how many steps you actually do get. So maybe keep your phone on you, keep that thing on you for a week and see what your average steps are. And then if you want to go back to like not having your phone near you, that way you can be more productive. That's perfectly fine too.
You know, I'll keep that thing on me. I really want you to just end the podcast with your amazing, what do you even call it? Comparison of investing, building muscle as an investment.
Wow. You really like that one.
I do really like that one because I don't know. It's a really great comparison. And if we're going to try to debunk the myth that cardio is the best tool for fat loss.
Okay.
You know,
so this is separate from the walking thing. We think everyone, if you have the ability to walk, getting 10,000 steps or double the steps you are getting now. So if you're only getting 2,000 steps a day, getting 4,000 steps a day, you're going to see major improvements. It's going to take a little longer, but I can almost guarantee results if you're doubling your steps right now.
Yeah.
You're
also, not getting enough. I want to just quickly say too, don't put too much pressure on yourself to get 10,000 every day, because some days might be different than others. So just go by weekly
average. Right. Yeah. If your weekly average is 10,000, that means some days are higher, some days are lower. That's why we always look at averages. Okay. This last one is not part of the walking portion, but this is just to debunk that cardio is the best tool for fat loss. And so here is the comparison. Cardio is renting your progress, or what would you call that? Yeah, renting your success, while building muscle is buying your success. Hold on. That's not what I said before, right? So
I don't know. You talked. Yeah. More.
Okay. Completely debunking the myth that cardio is the best tool for fat loss. Cardio is renting, while building muscle and strength training is owning. Or investing. So cardio is renting, building muscle is investing or owning your success. Cardio is like renting an apartment. You only get to rent the apartment for as long as you want to, or as long as you can. If you don't have any more money, you can't rent the apartment. Whereas if you were to invest or buy something, let's say you invest in something, you get to own that. So that's what strength training is. And I think I've said it better on another podcast. I don't know. I'm just getting my words mixed up right now. Cardio is renting your success. Strength training is owning your success.
Yeah,
you will always have that.
Yeah, it's just the difference between temporary and, you know, continued sustainability.
Right.
It's a long-term game.
Yeah. And strength training is investing and compounding. So like even on a day you don't work out, you still might get benefit from when you worked out 3 days ago and used weights. Whereas if you're only using cardio as your tool for fat loss, you have to do cardio every day to maintain what you worked for. And almost immediately when you stop using cardio, you lose it all and you have to go back. And if you lost 4 days, you can't just make up those 4 days with 4 days of more cardio.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody has experienced it where, you know, that you take a long break and you feel like you're right back where you started. You were trying to build your endurance or you were training for a race or something.
If you're just using cardio as a tool for fat loss.
Right. Correct. Sorry.
Yeah. So, but with strength training, you can do the bare minimum 2 to 3 times a week and compound on that and keep seeing progress. And even if you get, you know, two weeks off and you step back for 2 weeks, you go back to the gym, you might feel a little weaker, but you're still making progress.
Yeah.
Compounds over time.
I'm pretty sure there was a study of people training consistently for 4 weeks.
Oh, well, there's a study on, there's a study on strength training where some participants do 12 weeks in a row, whereas the other cohort does 4 weeks on, two weeks off, 4 weeks on. Yeah. And they saw the same amount. Yeah. They saw the same amount of changes in body composition and in strength.
Exactly. Like,
yeah. So if you're using weights, you don't even have to go the full 3 months of working out to see the same results as if you did 4 weeks, then a 2 week break, then 4 weeks on. And that's much more realistic for a lot of people where they'll go for 4 weeks, maybe have 2 weeks off and then go back in for 4 weeks. It's just a much more realistic thing, much more realistic goal to accomplish than cardio, where you have to do it every single day in order to maintain what you have, or if you want to see any sort of progress. With that being said, thank you guys for listening. We hope to do this at least once a week, releasing a podcast episode once a week. If you guys enjoyed it, please give us a like, a thumbs up on wherever you're listening, or a 5-star. Share it, please. I think that's going to be the most helpful. Just make sure you tune in and listen for our future episodes.
Yeah. You don't have to smash the notification bell. Just lightly caress it, please.
I don't even think there's a notification bell.
There is on Spotify. On Spotify.
There is? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Then please do that. Sounds good to me. Sounds good to you?
Sounds good to me.
Thank you guys for listening. We love you all. This has been Fit-ish.